things, if you can just talk to the report so that we can finish, at least have enough time for engagement before we go to the next problem, which is the city. And I'm sure you're also invited. The deputy president will be responding to questions in the house. Okay, thank you very much. So over to you, Chair. I am going to allow the Chair, I'm sure, to do the remarks, opening remarks. And Chair, in your remarks, I think if you could also focus on, I would want to know why we don't have an appointed CEO. And just give us a background of where you come from and where are you now. Because I want to know if we're making progress or not, because you also came out of administration. So give us a feel that you're now moving forward and you're not going backwards, because you cannot be moving forward and backwards, but forward forever. Over to you. Thank you.
Our gratitude to you, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members. If I may quickly touch on the matter of the CEO, up until May, we had a CEO in the organization, but who decided to part ways with us because of personal matters. He needed to come back to Cape Town instead of continuing in Johannesburg because of some family matters. But I do want to say, Honorable Chair, that our former CEO was or is an engineer, and even as he decided to leave due to this, we felt that we could continue using him as far as our artisan development program is concerned, because as the services sector, we don't have technical people, but we are expected to deal with artisan development, even on the technical side. And so we thought that we could continue using him, even as he is this side, on a consultative basis. To help us with our artisan development program, which he is doing. Thank you very much. We shall be advertising the position of CEO in January. The aim being that we would like a new CEO to start with us in the new financial year. In the meantime, we do have an acting CEO who had been there even before and who, I dare say, has been doing quite a steady job. Thank you very much. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we'd like to talk about our previous audit outcomes. We'd like to touch base on how we've addressed those previous audit outcomes, and in the process deal with our organizational performance. We then would like, with your permission, please, to then get to the current audit outcomes, which the committee will be happy to see that are an improvement on the past. And indeed, we have decided that we must build on the current one and move towards a clean audit, and we will show what steps we have taken to try and get there. And we will focus on current organizational performance and future plans, looking at those against using the previous ones as a benchmark and as a base. And indeed, we will touch on mandatory transparent skills development, sector development. We will also deal with the discretionary grant performance dashboard and our certification performance dashboard. I will deal with the first matters on the governance side as to what we are doing towards the clean audit. The acting CEO will deal with organizational performance and future plans, Honorable Chair. And our CFO will then deal with highlights of the financial statements and action plan to address the issues and findings. Indeed, Honorable Chair, as you've said, the CETA was previously under administration. The new board actually came 3 months after the end of the financial year under which the CETA was under administration. And indeed, we found then that the Auditor General was of the opinion that there were matters of serious concern, and therefore we were qualified. With regards to financial statements, the real matter pertains to our commitment schedule and where the amount could not be supported when the AG looked at our commitment. With regards to performance information, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, our targets were not consistent with planned targets. The targets that we reported were not consistent with what was appearing on our plans. And we didn't have the required specificity in terms of our performance targets, so therefore they could not be measured. And we had not defined our performance indicators as clearly as the AG required us to. And the reliability of the information presented in terms of mandatory grants, funded skills development, and sector development was not satisfactory. In essence, Honorable Chair, we were found not to be smart in terms of our performance planning as well as, of course, delivery. What we did, Honorable Chair, arriving, as indicated, 3 months into the financial year, was to really identify some of the weaknesses. And we found that our finance department was not properly consulted as far as we were concerned. And indeed, we embarked on a process of reconstituting it, which process led also to a parting of ways between us and the then CFO. We appointed a new CFO. We focused on irregular expenditure, and we asked all managers under whom the various infractions had occurred to each one account. And I dare say that that led to at least two senior people leaving the organization, particularly on the supply chain management side. We focused on risk management, and we took every manager and all departments through a risk management workshop. We developed a risk register through which they were taken, and we made it clear to everybody that risk management is the responsibility not of executive management, but of every individual in the organization, including our cleaners. We had some concerns about the performance of the previous audit committee, because the question we asked was, where was the audit committee when all of those lapses occurred? We appointed a new audit committee. We are happy to report that it is the committee that we as the board are satisfied with. We then also decided that we would exercise much closer oversight than we ordinarily would, given the fact that we would have only four board meetings, for example, and one exco meeting per month. But we did say that we would be available, we would come to the organization, meet with the CEO every Tuesday, and that we would not be paid for that, just to avoid the situation where people think that, no, the board is here to make more money. We then also engage organizational development experts, the focus being on them working hand in hand with our staff members so that relevant skills would be transferred. We strengthened our processes with regards to the awarding of professional grants, and every grant is awarded on the basis of due diligence having been done in relation to the entity concerned, because we had identified that as a major weakness, where we had awarded grants to people who did not have the requisite capacity, which led to us losing money. For example, in Friday, we had an entity engaged for 17 million rand. After 10 million rand, it just collapsed, and we were left with only the 7 million. But to continue and finish the project, we need something like 18 million. So instead of 17 million rand, we're spending 28 million rand. Similarly, in Umpolozi, we had a similar case where we contracted for 5 million, we ended up spending 10 million because along the way, the service provider could not continue with the project. We are following up on those, Honorable Chairman, Honorable Member. Our legal department is claiming those monies back. For this period, we are happy to report that we have received an unqualified audit opinion. No material audit findings are there in relation to our financial statements. In terms of performance, we are addressing challenges that we are faced with. We had 2,299 learners, for example, enrolled in 2012-2013. This time around, we are looking at 10,622. There have been some improvements in the usefulness and reliability of our performance information. There's only one finding relating to qualifications and quality management, and that is because the relevant indicators are not reliable. We are still to improve quite significantly in the achievement of planned targets. We have embarked on a highly focused program towards a clean audit and improvement in organizational performance. We've reconstituted the organizational structure. Numbers are still pretty much the same, from 343, we're now at 344. But we have completely reconstituted the functions because we found that CISA has, for example, put together some of the functions that shouldn't have been there. For example, you apply for accreditation in one particular unit, and if you had a conflict with that unit, you had to appeal to the same unit in terms of the structure of the CISA. So we've cleaned up challenges such as those ones. For example, we combined levies and learning. Learning refers to straightforward implementation of learning programs. Levies relate more to the financial side of things. So we've moved levies to finance, for example, as part of that. During administration, there has been a process called migration, where people have been moved and some of them practically demoted. And we found that that has interfered with people's skills, experience, and knowledge in relation to where they are in quite a number of instances. We tried to clean that up by moving our staff in line with their qualifications, skills, experience, and knowledge. We are busy improving business processes. For example, accreditation. Instead of us receiving an application and just going to see the applicant, we are now saying we look first at the submission. If there's something that is inadequate, then we ask for it beforehand, so that sorted out before we go on the visit. That's just one example. We're redesigning and we're implementing and monitoring controls throughout the period. Instead of us only discovering come reporting time where the challenges are, we are doing this
foreign countries investigating them and checking if they are being implemented in line with the contract. And in some instances, we didn't even have contracts, and we're addressing that also as part of this process. We've introduced a performance management system. All our employees, as part of our salary and wage agreement, salary increase agreement, we put a clause there that everybody is going to be subjected to a performance agreement, and therefore these are now being signed. Our senior managers and executives have already signed those. We've come up with incentives. We are moving money. For example, we no longer buy leave from people. We are saying, instead of buying leave, we are taking the money we were using all along to buy leave, we are putting it into a performance kitty, and we are saying those who want more money will get it via performance, not just bringing their leave and selling it to us. We're improving the discretionary grant allocation processes. We had an EOI process as we arrived that took so long to process for the simple reason that it was too open-ended. So we are now having processes that are focused, where we indicate from the beginning, these are the projects we are going to fund, these are the learning interventions, these are the levels that we are going to fund, and these are the amounts we are going to allocate, so that you have people applying specifically for those things, not just throwing their heads. I mean, throwing their head into the head. We also are working on a timely allocation of discretionary grants. Where that took us up to 2 years, we now have a process that we have just started that's going to take exactly 3 months for us to allocate those. Training providers are no longer being paid on the basis of tranches. It's no longer a tranche system. We are paying on a performance-based system. You do the work, and every month you show us how far you are. We pay exactly for what you have done, so that we can avoid the situation where we paid up to 70% in terms of a tranche system, but when you check in terms of the actual work done, only about 20-30% has been done, which makes it easy for people to then leave the system and leave us with the learners without completing the work they were supposed to do. We've established a project coordination office, which differs from your normal PMU in that this one begins right from the time we allocate, and it monitors every intervention, every step of the way. The induction, the contracting, the registration of learners, the induction, the monitoring, the external moderations, right up to certification. Even though these are carried out elsewhere, it monitors those so that it can advise the board if there's no movement as far as those are concerned. And we have a continuous system of tracking and monitoring action plans to address audit findings. With regards to current organizational performance, we have already started with contracting for this EOI process that I'm talking about. These are discretionary grants 2013-2014. We've allocated there for 23,612 learners, the value of 511.3 million. We have approved as the AA in principle, pending due diligence, the allocation for 20,963 learners, the value there is 523 million. We've opened the application window the 22nd of this month. We're closing with 1 November. That window allows for an allocation for 11,633 learners to the value of 302.4 million rand. We are advertising in December now for the 2015-16 discretionary grant. The idea being that the recruitment will happen in January as we finalize contracting towards the end of March. There we are targeting 23,200 learners, the value 604.7 million rand. We shall then, if you look at 1 April 2014 and the end of the current financial year, we shall then have allocated 479,409 learners to the value of 1.9 billion rand. This for us, honorable remember the honorable case very significant. Because as we came in, the big refrain, the big chorus was that the CETA had not made allocation for the entire period of administration. And therefore there was a dire need for training to be restarted within the services sector. And we are very pleased to report that that kind of allocation shall have happened. With out of that 1.3 guaranteed as at the end of this year. Honorable Chair, at this point, please, with your permission, I'd like to hand over to our acting CEO to then deal with more specifics in relation to where we were the last time around we were here and what strides we have made. Thank you very much.
You know, really triggered off by time. Now, I just want to check with the honorable members. I know that this presentation was circulated to members, the members have read. We just wanted to engage. But then maybe we should then, if this is the case, maybe request that you start on page 8 and take us so that we can allow members sufficient time for engagement with the report. I would say slide 8, because it's 8, that's the only page 8, not slide, yeah, page 8. And a highlight of financial statements.
That would be the CFO with your permission, honorable chair.
Okay, let me check with the CEO. What are the key areas that you would have loved to share with us? Key.
Thank you, honorable chair and members. I think that the highlight for us is more around where we are currently, and the chairperson has touched on that. And perhaps this slide summarizes it slightly. In terms of the three-pronged approach that we follow. Essentially, from a performance perspective, we've got plans in place that address the prior year rolled-over targets that were unmet from 2011-12, 2012-13, and 2013-14. And so those allocations have been made, and I think the one highlight I wanted to make through the change in our contract management process is that we have already got 55% of our phase one allocation of learner documentation verified and contracting is happening. So by the end of the financial year, we aim for end of January, those commitments will all be in place. The second prong of our plan is to focus on the allocations and commitments for 14-15. And in order to then improve expenditure performance during the financial year for 15-16, those allocations for 15-16 would have been made in advance of the financial year. And I think that's the key thing. From our audit committee and from our accounting authority, we've had to look at three different sets of allocations, and we've put processes in place, and we've progressed far down the line to ensure that those allocations and implementation can proceed and expenditure can improve earlier on in the financial year. And I think the last point I'd like to highlight is the following slide on certification performance. Titled Certification Performance Dashboard is, I think we were here in February of this year to present, albeit late, on our 12-13 financial statements and annual report, and we indicated that there was an outstanding certificate to the tune of 9,597, and I just wanted to highlight the fact that we've reduced that by 56%, and we are have established processes be able to clear that out by the end of this financial year so that we are up to speed with current certifications and dealing with current performance results. So I think those would be the two key points that I'd like to highlight. The rest you've seen in the annual report, we've made significant improvements in our 13-14 annual report in terms of performance in relation to the previous year, and you would note that we partially achieved on 56% of our total performance indicators, pretty much evenly spread across the two categories. So we will welcome further engagement and questions.
Thank you very much. Over to the CFO.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I've sent this to just basically summarize the financial report, and basically I took that the members would have gone through the detailed annual report. So the one thing I wanted to highlight for the committee in terms of the statement of financial performance, what used to be called the income statement, is that we have received about 1.2 billion of skill development levy income. And during the year then, I think that the chair had alluded to at the beginning that there was a little bit, because of the administration period, there was no spending in terms of discretionary grants, and as such, we ended up with a surplus of 469 million. And in terms of the grant regulations, then we had to pay over some money to the National Skills Fund that was not committed, and this resulted in us paying back about 185 million of the surplus to National Skills Fund. And then, Chair, I also just wanted to highlight that the Services Sector has supported public institutions in this current financial period to the tune of 311 million, where we paid about 148.7 million to NSFAL Basari support, and also then supported the National Skills Fund public equity infrastructure support or to the value of about 162.7 million. Chair, in terms of the financial highlights of the financial the statement of financial position, which was formerly known as the balance sheet, it reflects that we've got a cash balance of 2.3 billion. And this, Chair, is also explained by the fact that during the administration period, we could not spend because of this long-drawn EOI process that the Chair spoke to. And I also think the LGCTA spoke to the things related to administration, where you first have to implement processes before you spend. So that has led us to have a 2.3 billion cash balance. And also we had committed as at 31st March, we had committed about 274 million to discretionary funds. And then this then resulted in us having reserves of about 1.73 billion. And I think the intervention of how we are spending and planning to spend this money is what the Chair has spoken to earlier, which will lead us to have committed us about 1.9 billion at the end of the financial year. But in terms of how this fund has been earmarked, about 1.4 billion, not 1.4, but 1 billion, has been set aside for discretionary projects. We have already allocated 500 million through this EOI phase, EOI process that the Chair was speaking to, and we are waiting for ministerial approval, where we have submitted a proposal to supporting government priorities to spend about 227 million of that. And there is then 300 million that we are planning to disperse or allocate in January, as the Chair has alluded to. Then there is about 692 million that has been set aside for what we call priority projects. These are special projects that the board approves. 523 million has already been allocated by the board in principle, as the Chair has alluded to. 169 million that is still to be allocated. Chair, also I'd like to highlight the issue of the regular expenditure. The Chair did speak to the issue of having held management accountable in terms of the irregular expenditure. I think, Chair, at the risk of not having the committee member when we're dealing with LGC that spoke to romanticizing the irregular expenditure, at the risk of not doing that, I would just like to say that it has indeed reduced from 141 million to 63.9 million in the current year. And if I'm to break it down in terms of the reasons, Chair, the reasons for this irregular expenditure is that there were about 27.2 million related to expired contracts. These are contracts would have entered into the service providers, but they would expire either after or before the service provider has completed the work, and you have no choice but to pay them because they've already delivered in the work. And number two, Chair, it also relates to where we have spent more than allowed 10% in administration costs. And this is not in any way related to the fact that we could not account for money, but the AG would have wanted us to have a process of systematically allocating the money that we spend between discretionary and admin expenditure. And where we could not then have that system, then it was deemed to be admin expenditure. So it also resulted in the increase in this irregular expenditure. So I think at a very high level, those are the reasons of why we have irregular expenditure. But I think as the chair has alluded to, we now have processes where we monitor these monthly in terms of also monitoring the expired contracts, monitoring our spending and instituting those systems to make sure that we are able to systematically allocate funds between discretionary funds and admin funds. And we are monitoring irregular expenditure on a monthly basis. Chair, I would have wanted to, with your permission, speak to how we've addressed the EG findings, but in terms of the highlights of the findings, I think I'm done, Chair. It is, Chair. It's the slide, it's the pie chart, Chair. I don't know the page number. Yes. Chair, in terms of the status, I think in 2012-2013, the AG has issued a total of about 99 findings. Of these 99, 44% were significant, and the others were those that are not significant findings. In terms of the current financial period, they issued 58 findings, of which 17 were significant and the others were not so significant. So this chair speaks to these action plans that we put in place to try and deal with the issues. The status as of the 31st or the 30th of September, Chair, which also speaks to where these processes that we've instituted of monitoring these things on a monthly basis. It shows that in terms of the overall findings that were issued in this current period, we have, as at 30 September, resolved about 38% of those findings, and 62% was in progress. So in progress means we've already started instituting action against those, but we have not completely resolved those. And if we break it down in terms of significant findings, Chair, we will note that the significant findings, 71%, has already been addressed, and we are in the process of addressing the remaining 29%. The significant findings, Chair, these are the ones that have the potential of affecting the audit document. Chair, at an overall level, it's just a high level as to what are the unresolved findings attributable to. But before that, Chair, I think we did touch on this, and the Chair did touch on this, that we have systematically implemented a process of making sure that we are monitoring action plans in relation to not just AG findings, also with internal audit findings. And we have established an audit steering committee that reviews the status of implementation, and also during the audit that interacts with the auditors to get to the root cause of what the issues are. And in terms of the unresolved findings, these chairs tend to be systematic findings in a sense that you would not necessarily be able to address them in one go. So these would be issues of improving and implementing our systems, they relate into those categories. And they are found that before we could resolve our meeting with forensics audit that the chair spoke to, and that in some of the findings that related to the APP, to be fully resolve those findings, we had to resubmit to the department the APP for them to approve the revised APP, so that is still awaiting approval. So we could not address those issues. And some of the findings, Chair, fall into the category of the findings that have not yet reached our set target date in terms of the implementation that we've set. So, Chair, that's just the highlight I wanted to give you in terms of the status of our implementation of the recommendation.
Well, thank you for the presentation. I will now open for a discussion. Honourable Member,
can now reflect on the presentation. Ms. Ntunu, Mr. Kasi, Ms. Gadime, and Mr. Mbat. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to just pose a question with regard to the ongoing investigations. Now, I know there was mention made of forensic investigations that are currently conducted, but there's also in your report an indication that before you can actually take action against people, they leave. Now, what do you recommend? Should financial misconduct charges be laid for the police? What should we do to stop this in the public sector? Because it seems that we have repeat offenders that move from one institution at a particular moment, jump ship to another institution, and just continue with a bad practice. Now, how do you suggest we go about that? The second issue is consequence management. It's good that you have indicated that you have taken firm action, and that you believe that you will turn the corner on that. Yet, how do you intend, do you deduct, because the PFMA makes provision for certain steps to be taken, do you have to get the relevant clause in the PFMA chair, and as an accounting authority, the board, will you make sure that you comply with Section 51 of the CMMA, which is actually very prescriptive of what you should do, and if you cannot manage it, you have to report it to the executive authority and to Treasury. So that's the second question with regard to, do you feel you're turning the corner, you will be able to get this bad culture out of the organization? And then thirdly, Chair, I just have a concern about the high vacancy rate, especially the high vacancy rate in senior management echelon. What do you intend to do to turn that corner so that you can have a stable organization which is well managed and which is actually executing its mandate as a seeker? I have a concern about that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you for your intervention. Next, Mr. Kuhn.
Thank you, Chair. May I first register a concern, Chair, with regard to a huge number of targets which were not achieved, and I hope that will be corrected moving forward. I would like to know whether the targets match or link with the critical skills as stated in the critical skills plan. That is my question. Chair, in the interest of time, I would just have that one question, but would like to say, because I will no longer get another time, to say I believe that the idea behind the CETA, be it the LG CETA or the services CETA that you're dealing with, the idea behind was really good, but the CETAs are really failing us in this regard. We are not only failing the department, but the South Africans out there. You need to take note of the fact that we are not all coming from the same background, or we were not all advantaged. So the opportunities that our government has provided us with are not really getting to people out there. So when we are doing this, please treat this case, this matter, as of serious concern and be sensitive. Always know that there are people who are really in dire need of these opportunities. And the failure, your failure, is really having a negative impact on the government. People are thinking that this government of the ANC is failing us, but it is the inefficiencies that are caused by these CETAs. There are plans, but the implementation by the CETAs in terms of skills development, we are not doing it. Please improve on that. Thank you.
Thanks for your intervention. Next.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I have to ask myself as I was receiving the presentation, because it was a very positive presentation, but I had to ask myself, was I reading the right documentation? Because it does not match the documentation that we have, and it does not match the annual report that we have. Now, I agree it must be positive, but the issue is, and I've noticed this, Chair, it's not just with this teacher, it's with others as well. When we look at the targets, there are specific targets that is the core business of the teacher. So take, for example, in the services teacher, the learning intervention targets is the core business of the teacher. Those are the outcomes that we are looking for. Whether our other programs, which is really the bulk of the bureaucracy, is working is meaningless if we are not producing the outcomes, which is the core business of the CETA. And it applies to the local government CETA, it applies to the CETA, and it applies to other CETAs, because I don't believe it's the role of government, or government's intention, to build bureaucracies that deliver nothing to our people. Now, there's a few comments I want to make on that. Number one, if we look at the core business, out of 40 targets that were planned, 5 of those 40 targets were achieved. 5. This is the core business of the CETA. This is what we measure, or we should be measuring the CETA against. Notwithstanding that, Chairperson, when I look at the notes to the financial statements on emoluments to the top management, there's bonus payments. Now, we're looking at the year in review of 2013-2014. This is management that was, I believe, if I understand correctly, after the administration ended in June of 2013. In a very short period of time, having been under the employ, not having met the core targets of the core business of the CETA, and yet it is fit enough when we are all supposed to be tightening our belts because, and we hear it in every single budget speech, from Governor Gordon now to Minister Nene, that we must tighten our belts and we must be able to bring transformation to our people on the ground. It seems fair to pay bonuses out. I think that's outrageous, and I think that this needs to be looked at more carefully across the different sectors, because at the end of the day, this money needs to be spent so that society gets bang for its buck. These are levies that are paid over. This is not just money that the CETA owns. They are the custodians of that. So I want to look at the question of bang for buck. Now, in the core business, there were supposed to be, I believe, 34,140 learners in particular that must be assisted. And there were 10,622 that were. And if we take the budget of the CETA, we take the budget that society must get bang for buck. We are looking at over 100,000 Rand being invested per individual, which I believe is not value for money for society. I believe that money can be spent, whether it is by the CETA or otherwise, more prudently, efficiently, so that more people of our people that are on the ground, that, to be quite honest, do not see opportunities in front of them, so that they can benefit and we can transform our society. Chairperson, you always talk about radically transforming what we do. Now, if this is something that must not be radically transformed, I don't know what is. And this is a sickness that is through our bureaucracy throughout, that we are not getting, and when I say we as society, as the people we represent, are not getting the type of value out of the money that is available. I want to make a suggestion, Chair, because I feel this is a perpetual thing. We have CETAs, the boards are appointed, now with the standardized constitutions, whatever the case may be, that there must be real consequences when targets, which I believe are quite reasonable targets, are not achieved. There must be real consequences. It must be legislated as such, it must be within the policy that the minister can roll out. But currently, as we go on, I don't want to sit in the same seat next year and be looking at the same thing and saying, is this what we are condoning as representatives of the public, that are saying, Well, it's fine. I don't think that the pace of what is happening is correct. I don't think that the amount of money that is being spent, which is outrageous amount of money, is providing the type of value that we need. And there needs to be, I think after we've looked at a few seasons, a very, very serious study on how do some of these things get corrected. But I mean, talking more than that is not going to change any of that reality right now.
Thank you. My first question will be directed to the chairperson of the speaker. Chairperson, you indicated that through your board, you have been able to convert lead selling. I can assure you that lead selling was banned by Treasury about 2.5 to 3 years ago. Many state institutions were told never to pay for leave. Now it's amazing that you come here and you tell us that is an achievement. You also indicate very good practices around working with management into finer details, making sure that things are implemented, having sessions on Tuesday. But let's go to page 6. Status of action plan to address the AG findings. You are on 44%. Is there any resistance to moving things faster? Because if AG in 2012-2013 gave you certain findings, it must be easier within 8 months, at least on average, to really work hard to improve on them. So 44% actually is not convincing. And then, you will forgive me, I do not have the copy of the annual, I think I left it in my office. But just like the other things, I'm interested to know what are these special projects that the board has allowance on? Because as far as I'm concerned, there are two types of projects. There's national interest projects that are basically linked to ministerial projects. Now, if the board also finds its way into the agenda of the organization instead of oversight, I have a problem. Because more often the history of the board looking at the SAA, they will end up getting more involved into more other things other than their own project. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm now going to request the chair and your team to respond to these questions. We'll take it, everybody, my lord. Yes, that means, was your hand up? Yeah. Oh my God. Oh, darling. You just allow me to tag in and then yourself.
All right. Thank you, Chairperson. Concerning the disciplinary steps that were taken, it is mentioned on page 118 that the accounting authority instituted a process of requiring management to account for irregular expenditure. Now, my question is that is what is the process regarding this process, and then were there any disciplinary steps taken against employees who contravened the PFMA by permitting an irregular wasteful and fruitless expenditure? If the answer is no, why?
Thank you. My apology once more. Open for the chair to respond to these questions, authorized by the honourable member.
Thank you very much, honourable chair and the honourable member. With regards to irregular expenditure, as honourable Killian indicated, the big problem we are faced with is that as soon as you start disciplinary processes, people resign. and indeed even the administrator of the LCC has indicated that. But what we have done on our part is without our legal services to then determine the extent to which we may be able to pursue people from a civil claims point of view. And that is a process that is ongoing. We've got our acting head of legal services here who can expand on that. Special project, honorable Mbaka, are indeed what you are saying. They are national projects of national interest. When we talk about the board involvement, what we are saying is that at the board, we have a duty to respond to national imperatives. And therefore, we specifically ask management, in terms of this specific national imperative, for example, six, what are you doing? What projects are being put to us? It's not projects that the board just decides to set up on its own. The CFO will deal with the 44%. And I think there's a bit of a misunderstanding there. It does not relate to core business performance. The question of serving you, we consider it a big achievement because we arrived there and found that the organization has over the years been buying the sleep even against the decision that was taken. And it's our fiduciary duty as the board to then say, this is something that government has specifically said cannot be done. And of course, then the people tell you about poverty, we use this money for our children's school fees and so on. And we then say, it's not about us taking any money away from you. It is about us using CETA money for the purposes for which they are intended. And you can only get this money via a performance. The bonuses, Honorable Kasim, if you look at those emoluments, you are going to find that those are what is called a 13th check in the CETA. Those bonuses are a 13th check. When we are actually on a cost to company situation, and we have incidentally just announced to our union that we shall no longer be continuing with that savings check because your total cost to company is supposed to be structured in such a way that you make provision for your own savings check. And even with this money, we have said we're taking it, we're putting it into a performance kitty, and if people want more money, they will get it via performance based on our performance management system. I must say that with regards to learning interventions and our achieving and the numbers not being what they should be, as indicated, we arrived there during administration, there has been no allocation at all. And we are very proud that from the time we arrived in July up to the end of this financial year, we shall have allocated 79,409 opportunities for our learners. We have such vulnerable classes. We want to deconstruct this whole thing of the CETA. What is a CETA? And indeed, as honorable Bata was saying, the CETA is not about all these processes. All these other things are just a support system towards the ultimate objective. Our ultimate objective is to give learners training opportunities and to train them qualitatively so that they can either be employed or they themselves can create employment. And to the extent that we have deconstructed the whole notion of the CETA to focus on that, we think that we are on track if you look at those numbers. And I am talking where we have already committed up to about 70% of the study. doesn't match the annual report. You know, for us it's a very significant thing that we arrive at that theater only qualified. And even the AG to put it clearly, even the AG says you guys are not going to turn this thing around in the short period that you have. Even this committee, your predecessors, those of you who were here when we were here in Fed, will remember that even the committee itself said, do you really think you're going to turn this thing around given the magnitude of the challenges they saw in the previous audit report? And our answer to them was, we've done this before, we will do it again. And if you look at our achievement, we're talking a 55% move from where we were and where we are now. And indeed, if you look at where we are going, we are certain that come the final audit, we shall be somewhere around 70-80% in terms of performance. Honorable Mutsuno, we note your concern that the target was not achieved must be achieved. Do they match with our critical skills? Indeed they do. What we do is our critical and skill skills are encapsulated in our annual performance plan. And our targets are set strictly on the basis of the ACP. If you look at our current, for example, a call for proposals, it comes exactly with the numbers we have already achieved in terms of the ACP and the gaps that we must still achieve. With regards to Honorable Killian, we must be honest, we are also frustrated that the minute you start taking action against people, they run away. And what you then have to do, you're forced to do, is a cost-benefit analysis. How much will it cost us to pursue this individual? You know, civil claims are a lot more expensive than criminals. And in most of these instances, you can only go the federal route. It's very difficult to prove a criminal case per se. And you find, you know, almost in all of the instances, that the amount we will spend chasing the person will be much more than what we are going to get from the person. And you end up throwing your hands in the air, and you just say, at least we benefited from the fact that a person who was posing risk to this organization is no longer there to pose the risk. Where we've been able to deduct money, we have done so. I'll give you one example where a particular manager was suspended. While on suspension, he started working for a major public institution in this country, but hid that from us, and only resigned when we served him with charges. But fortunately, we got wind of that, and we deducted those monies from the monies that were due to him. The high vacancy rate, I think I should explain this. In real terms, this rate is not high because we reconstituted the whole organizational structure. From the 343, we only added one more to 344. And we had to move people. We had to move people. So what would have been a feeling of vacancies under normal circumstances had to be moving people, you know, in terms of their skills, experience, knowledge, and so on, education. That is what we have been doing. And to consider that we are short of now 26%, I think that has been quite an achievement, but we do note that we should be at 100%. So we do want to note that. Honorable Chair, I think I have tried to deal with the matter. If I may now ask our CFO to please deal with that 44% matter. That's what
and
just to explain the 44%, I think the slide, what we are attempting to do with the slide was to indicate the number of findings that were raised in the previous period when the CETA was qualified versus the number of findings that were raised when the CETA was finally unqualified. So the 44% represents the significant findings that were raised in 2012-2013. And if we now compare it to 2013-2014, the significant findings were 29% in total. But I think when we are talking to the data of implementation, it's the next slide that got the yellow and green color, which indicates that of the significant findings that were raised, we have already as of 30 September, which is 6 months during the financial year, implemented 31% of those significant findings. Of course, in total, we have implemented 38% of the findings as of 30 September. And as I explained, Chair, that some of these that are not implemented, because we have set targets and deadlines to say this will be implemented by this date, majority of those have not reached those implementation dates, and some of those are systematic in that the implementing systems to be doing that. So in their nature, they will take longer to implement. But I think I was just trying to clarify it.
Okay, you're done. Chair, do you want to have a second part?
Not for myself, please, Honorable Chair. Our
Acting
CEO would just like to
talk. All right, Acting CEO, you may come in. Thanks, Chair. Just a comment around skills and critical skills and the alignment between our enrollments and completions in relation to that, and perhaps questions related to the strategic objectives of the organization. Perhaps to contextualize that it's around maturity and planning, and we're now currently planning for the 15-16 year. And as an organization moving from compliance, which was our aim during 13-14, and some improvements added to that in 14-15, we're looking at outcomes and impact. And so we are strengthening alignment and looking at one, for example, one outcome goal is the percentage alignment between skills and critical skills, because we can chase numbers, but if those numbers are not relevant to the demand, then we're not going to have the impact in terms of employment and labour market absorption. So those are some of the strategic discussions that management is engaging with the board on to set performance measures at an outcome level and to ensure that our outputs are actually directly aligned to those outcomes. So for us, that's quite exciting. In terms of our core business, our core business cannot and should not be limited to funded interventions. The demand that we've, in our recent SSC update for the services sector, shows and is quantified at around 170,000 in the skills and critical skills that have been identified. And in terms of an average, based on our levy income, an average number of learners, bearing in mind that the unit costs vary significantly between learning interventions and for employed versus unemployed learners. But we would be looking at anything between 20,000 and 25 that we should be able to fund off our discretionary grants that we directly sub-grant to employers and or service providers. So we need to, as an organization, set objectives that look at leveraging investments far beyond discretionary grants. There are other tax incentives that employers should be mobilized to access in terms of leveraging their own investments. For example, unfunded, what we call unfunded, but it's actually employer-funded learnerships and the tax rebate that they can get, or any youth tax rebate that exists. We need to find a way to leverage that. Even though the mandatory grants, we've seen an impact in terms of the number of employers submitting applications for mandatory grants, and possibly this could be generated through the statutory reduction from 50% to 20%. You know, we need to find a way to still mobilize and encourage employers to access and invest in training far beyond what we directly invest and fund ourselves. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Just a quick one from me. Okay. 10 to 2. I know I've got two pending ones. Sure, you'll die if I don't.
Could you relate to the management vacancy?
All right.
And can I proceed?
Then it will show you one down front. Sure. Promise.
The last of my skills.
All right. No, that's fine. Is it a follow-up? Okay. Let me allow you a follow-up. It must be shorter to the point, and then I've got just two critical ones, and then...
Chairperson, what is just evident is I indicated your vacancy rate in senior management level, which I wanted to have explained. But on page 58 and 59 of the annual report, you actually list the people who have resigned. Now, it says they're terminated. Does termination mean they were bumped out, or did they resign? If they were bumped out, can we please have an explanation for the loss of office compensation that was paid out to two of those individuals, which amounts to 1.2 million rand? That is your CFO, and the person who was your executive manager stakeholder liaison. Can we just have clarity? What does termination mean? Does it mean that the board terminated the services, or does it mean resignation?
Thank you very much. If there are other still ones who still have questions, can you please submit those so that we can then forward them in writing to Servicita for their written response. Thank you very much.
Chair, you know, can we restart the 3 o'clock?
Come again?
Can we restart the 3 o'clock, not at 2 o'clock?
Oh, 3.
Yes.
So
can I
start
at
3?
Yeah.
Oh, no, sorry.
So I was wondering why we are being cut.
I said this is our, I did say that this is our meeting, so thank you so much for assisting me, my team member. You know? All right. Please, Sorry for the pressure. In my mind, it's 2. So I was pressing everybody, pressurizing me. Okay. All right, over to you and the person.
Thank you, Chief. Just a couple of things. I'll try to get to the point very quickly. The first one, I just want to ask around some more clarity on the certifications. Because there was something mentioned in the presentation, I think from yourself, from the CEO. But there's other things within the targets itself. I just want to get some clarity for the 2013-2014 year, and maybe then what you were referring to was since the end of that financial year, and the progress on that. It also linked to service providers that were not properly accredited, okay? So just as I think when you're still under administration, service providers that are not properly accredited, people pay some money as well to do certain courses. And since then, I know I've dealt with many of those queries. They have not been certified, or what they call their web seal, or whatever the case may be, and they've been dealing with specific offices of the CETAs, but they are unable to get assistance. I've managed to have one or two of them, but I know that there is an intervention program for those people. So you don't need to explain that, but maybe for the benefit of the committee. But in terms of how widely that is advertised to people that have gone through those processes in particular, because I get the impression that they are not very much aware of those programs. The second thing is with regards to those short courses in particular. I just want to get an idea because it's not very clearly defined within the documentation in terms of how much of these traineeships are, how short, what is the average period, for example, that people will go through of those that we are assisting. And then in terms of that 2 billion rand, the cash equivalents from the, what is formerly known, the balance sheets, in the notes. So it's spoken about, for example, these are your short-term investments, so these are your bank accounts that you put together, and this is how you intend, I think on one of the slides, this is how you intend to spend that money. How did those reserves come about? Can you just get an understanding? And what is the plan or part of the strategic plan in the future in terms of reserves or investments from the CETA itself and future expenditures in that regard? The last point that I want to make, Chairperson, just in closing, is two last points, very quickly. Those people, and I think it's a general rule, I know that there's always a cost-benefit sort of trade-off when we are pursuing people that have sort of resigned and have committed some or purported some form of fraud. My advice on this is that
when people feel that they can do things and get away with it because they leave, it perpetuates the problem. And we need to make examples of some of these people. I don't think we've done it enough. We need to make examples of them to say that we don't care what you've done or where you run to, but we're going to find you and we're going to indict you. We're going to claim from you so that people know there are consequences. Because this is happening, it doesn't just affect one sita, it doesn't just affect the sita as a whole. But if we can make examples of these individuals, others would be deterred from following the same suit. Because some people don't care whether they have a future within that organization. They will do what they need to do and they'll leave and it means nothing to them because they are safe. And the last point is this, and I 100% agree with the CEO, you're not going to be able to solve this problem alone with the current approach. My only point that I was making is that with the money that is available, with what we can do with that, let's try and be as efficient as possible and try and squeeze out every drop of value out of that in whatever models that we can. So that we can help more people, but obviously in a manner that is done strategically, as you mentioned, so that they can get absorbed and they can build a career from there. But we need to squeeze that out, and we need people to know that they do have an avenue, because the public perception of the services seeker included is very, very low, and we need to make sure that we can make those contributions to the community. And it starts, and I'm very glad that there won't be a 13 check again. It starts with those type of protections. It starts with those type of responsible decisions to say, this is how we're going to practice our duty to the public going forward. Thank you, Chair.
All right. I'm checking with the honourable members if they would like to come in, because remember, now we're corrected. Still have got time.
Yeah. Thank you. I think also I want to say something on this cost-benefit situation. I think if we talk of cost in terms of litigation in relation to this, we should also be calculating it in relation to the loss that institutions, particularly times have been incurring since the establishment of this. And cost-benefit in a public institution should also be related with public interest. Public interest is above any other cost. In South Africa, look at local government sector. People do not want to listen, do not take the directives and the guidance of the administrator, because they know there are no consequences. They can just leave. In another entity in agriculture, people just get paid. There's no activity. The government puts money all the time. It's fun. And because they are looking at the billions that we're talking about, billions and billions of dollars separately. The intention of government is to make sure that we make an impact in eradicating poverty. This morning we received a report on the World Bank. The World Bank assessment on the state of impact of the South government in reducing poverty. The Statistics General also produced a report that whilst we are doing progress, but the resources that are supposed to impact on these things and the instruments that are available are not necessarily utilized. But this billions of rand goes to sitas. In the local government sitas, 59 million rand that was budgeted, they did not even spend, they only spent 8 million rand. Inability to spend government money that is given to sitas. That's wrong. But the salaries, if you relate with the expenditure to the objective related to the salary, these do not talk to each other. We continue to pay, but we do not get the benefits, value for money, the service government. That's a chapter thing. We must change this attitude. But litigation, if we are sure, the main thing that the parliamentarians were worried about, you have huge legal costs if you lose these cases. Because you want to rush things, you want to rush things. But if we we are so focused on what we need, know what we need, win this case. And the part of government, that is a cost benefit we are talking about. It's better for us to get the countries who undermine public institutions, the steal from public institutions, if we are able to win those cases. Because these boards and these executive managers, they do this throughout public institutions. Therefore, we can't win this meeting in Chapter 6 without the committee saying that we want to encourage that CITAC and the board should use their power to find these people, litigate them. We must make them better if they are still from government. Last year I said if we had a ban in another theater outside there, we're supposed to take all these officials and put them in a ban, but our constitution does not allow that. Because people are stealing freely in our government. Therefore, we must be able to say enough is enough, this thing that is happening here. Therefore, action must be taken. Thank you very much.
The department has not met the target for the first year intervening students at universities due to inadequate NSFAS budget. And there were student protests, I'm sure you read about them, you know, across the country. Now, why was the bursary target for unemployed not met? Alright? The CISA has 185 million uncommitted funds. These funds were transferred to NSF as per the regulation. Can the department, this one goes to the department, reprioritize the funds to cater for upfront payment of universities and colleges for January 2015? There is money. Now we're looking at redirecting and reprioritization of this to address this problem that we will be confronted with between January and March. Well, the minister declared 2013 a year of artisan, and there was a budget allocation. And so the CISA decided to achieve 5%. When that year, the whole year, was declared the year of accident, what happened? Well, I think it's 2024, has been declared a decade of accident, and it is indeed disappointing that the speakers did not perform, or they have not achieved the target on accident. Now on your page 8 of your slide, of your presentation, the CISA has revenue from skills development levy of budget to the tune of 1.2 billion. Now what I would like to find out from CISA is how many young people have you supported in the year under review, because this money is for supporting these young people who are unemployed, post school young people who are sitting there not doing anything. Supposed to support them, and you're sitting with this money. Alright? And then on the surplus of 469.5 million, to me in terms of the TFMA, this translates to surplus which would be under expenditure. Have a surplus. Supposed to use it. Isn't it? Your plan, the budget is linked to a plan. So if you've got a surplus, means of an under expenditure. In terms of the PFMA, this is it's an offense. Alright? But why are you not using this money for skills development? Why? There is money out there, and the people think this government is not caring. And we know for a fact that this government is caring. But the implementing agents are letting this government down. So why? I mean, it's a lot of money. 469 million surplus. please talk to us about this one, because indeed it doesn't sound correct. Again, as you read through the report, it does seem that CETA had a problem of contract management. I would like to know what is the board doing about this, because the board is supposed to oversee and make sure that things run smooth in the institution. We will now allow you to respond to the issue raised. Okay, but before that, again on the same page, commitment of 274.4 million. You know what this means? You rush to commit this so that it is rolled over. Which is an overbearing to the new program or the plan for the new financial year. I would like you to explain this one and what are you doing to make sure that you avoid this. You commit money at the end of the financial year, money that was supposed to have been used in that financial year. Then you commit so that you don't lose it. Because in terms of budget allocation, it would end up in a saving and then it would also not be rolled over. But for it to be rolled over, you've committed. And then how is it being used now? Because you have a surplus. I hope you don't count on this money on your surplus. Because this one is a rollover. It's supposed to work, do the work of the previous year's financial plan. And then you also have priority project 692 million. You have 169 million still to be allocated. Still to be allocated. There's a desperation. From receiving where I come from when I came late, I was fighting, saying that can they give us money? Because there's no money. And I said, okay, can we get money from CETA to pay for this stuff? So this one, so it's a real national problem. It's a matter of national interest. So there's this money. Also, maybe I should ask the department to look at this money and check if they cannot redirect this budget to NEFA to close the gaps that are there at present. The budget, it's actually the budget shortfall or the under budgeting for NEFA.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. And thanks to the honorable members as well. I am going to just deal with the matters as I have noted them. The CFO and the acting CEO will then, if honorable Chair, with your permission, also assist where they can add something. We note the advice from the Honorable Kasim and Honorable Bala in relation to fearlessly pursuing wrongdoers on the basis of principle, and as a preventative measure from this continuing any further. Even as the cost might be high. And indeed, we note the fact that we could spend a lot of money now, but it would help us prevent a lot more losses in the future. The reserve came about, Honorable Kasim, as a direct result of no allocations being made during the administration period. That is really how these reserves came about. And indeed, we have virtually committed everything now, you know, because we also don't want to lose this money. We've already lost 185 to the National Skills Fund, but we don't regret that much because it's going to a skills fund that does pretty much the kind of work we are doing. So we are happy that it goes to them. Though of course we would like to discuss it ourselves if we can. The question of short courses, your typical short principle, we've taken the decision that we are no longer allocating short courses for unemployed people, because that merely gives them something that works for them maybe for a day or two and dies afterwards. But we are saying we allocate short courses to employed people, where, for example, they run a risk of losing their jobs because they don't have a particular skill like computer skills. There we are happy to do that. The certification issue, the figure we have given you, that 50% gain, or slightly more than 50%, is based strictly on our interaction with providers. We went to all of them, we said to them, give us a clear picture. We don't want this anecdotal thing where, you know, people talk in the air. Tell us where we owe you certificates. Give us the evidence. Paul behind me there has got a full file that shows us what certificates we still owe people and so on. And therefore, that is work in progress. As we've indicated, it's going to be completed by the end of this year. The whole issue of accreditation, indeed, Honorable Kassim, it's a bit of a disgrace for us, because it takes up to 6 months to a year for people to be accredited by us. And as I indicated earlier on, the big problem has been that we have constructed this to outside people. We have 13 people to deal with all our stakeholders in terms of accreditation as well as quality assurance of learner achievement. And indeed, those 13 were each getting up to 150,000 rand per month, besides their transport, food, and accommodation paid by us. And because there were only 13, you had a situation where, in essence, we were spending all those millions per month to actually create a backlog, rather than to end the backlog. And so we have stopped that outsourcing of that function. And we have created 30 positions within our quality management division, full-time jobs, and we are currently recruiting for those to deal with that. And on the learning intervention side, we created 20 positions which are overlapping. And therefore, we've got an additional 50 people who are bringing on board to deal with that, because we have said we want to kill this backlog once and for all. And when it comes to the terminations, this word is used interchangeably, the word terminated. And when I look at this, and the acting CEO will correct me here, the only person we dismissed is the COO there after a disciplinary process. All these others are resignations. These are people who resigned on their own. It's the COO that's where we are talking about a dismissal. And the matter is still, of course, within the legal process.
Jefferson, it is interesting. It is for financial irregularity, because the COO was paid a bonus of 109,000 rand. So was that based on an irregular financial misconduct, irregularities? What is it? Because you can't pay the person on the one hand a bonus and on the other hand dismiss the person because he did not perform well. He or she didn't perform well.
There's a contradiction there.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. By the time the COO was dismissed, they had already been paid that money for the previous financial year. The matter relates to there are two reasons why the COO was dismissed. There was a misrepresentation of the data publicly by the COO, which she admitted to in the hearing. Of course, she cited particular freedom of speech and so on matters. The second thing is that the COO had been paid money
Now, one of the charges was that she should not have taken that money. That was the charge we against her. That she should not have taken the money because she knew that she had not been COO at that time, and therefore taking the money, whether it was the decision of the administrator or the president of the country, doesn't matter. Bottom line is that she was not COO at that time, and therefore we consider that as having destroyed the organization. And
but the money
has been claimed.
I mean, I know you've dismissed her, but she was paid back that money. That's government money.
Indeed, as I am saying, there's a claim that we have lost against her for that money. Our legal people are pursuing that. We have claimed the money back. The commitment of 274 million, Honorable Chair, is not a commitment we have made towards the end of the financial year. These are commitments that are sitting in our commitment schedule. These are projects that have been running all along. They are commitments that have been there all along. The 169 million rand, I must think that with the Chair's observations about NSFAS, we have given NSFAS 148 million rand. And they have used part of the money. They are still sitting at about 66 million rand, I think, of that, not yet allocated. And we had a meeting with the NSFAS incidentally about 2 weeks back. And we did say to NSFAS that indeed that 66 million rand must be used, and we shall give them more money, given the fact that we know that in January, come January, there will be learners who will be looking for financial support. So we have made that commitment to the NSFAS. And I do want to say that constitutes, we have decided as the CETA that we will no longer allocate bursaries for higher education on our own. We allocate them via the NSFAS, and therefore that guarantee is there.
Talk about more money. I want you to talk CETA. Because if you say more money, that sounds like it's from some pocket. You must find out, work out how much of the surplus or the whole surplus, the committee, say this whole surplus will be redirected to. And it must be authorized by the department. Well, this is the money transferred from the department. Otherwise, this will end up being an unauthorized expenditure and take you back from your unqualified to your qualified opinion, audit opinion. So everything that you do it within the parameters of the law. But this money we really need to just for information to assist the NSF. And it's good that you told us that 66 is not committed, because then, honorable members, I'm sure you will agree with me, we need to follow up on this one to check where is this money lying, so that we can monitor, make sure that that space that we are worried about, the unaligned, that is impacted negatively by the unaligned, misaligned financial year, that space is a hot potential. So we really want to zoom into that one and to the intervention there and so.
Our ECOFIO will deal with the amount based on their plan. In the meantime, I'll just continue and hand over to Hafiz with your permission. In relation to contract management, we have taken this function and handed it over to our legal people, because one of the biggest challenges we had in the CETA was that contracts were drawn up by people who were not necessarily okay with legal principles.
We have one meeting
number of people who have supported in the year under review, Honorable Chair, based on your question. The number is 10,632. The accident issue is indeed a weakness on our part. That is why, the reason the Chair asked, what is the reason, what happened? The CETA, the services CETA, as indicated earlier, is not technical. It's not a technical CETA. It's unlike your construction, your MER CETA, your LC CETA, and so on. And all along, the CETA wanted to run at the program itself without any kind of external help or without getting people with the requisite technical qualifications. And that really messed us up. That is why, as I said earlier, when our previous CEO decided to leave, we said to him, even if you are kicked out, we can make use of the fact that you are an engineer and help us drive our artisan development program. And indeed, numbers have been increasing significantly since we engaged him. And so it was just a question of strategy. We did not have a strategy that talks to the complexities of the challenge we had. And we think we are now starting to get that particular one right. Indeed, as indicated, we gave NSPAS 148 million rand, and we are happy. We are happy with the relationship. It started on a difficult note because their reporting mechanisms were different from our mechanisms. But we've all feared that, and indeed we've also asked the Auditor General to assist us, you know, come up with a uniform method of reporting between us and NSPAS, one that would satisfy the AG. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Our acting CEO and the CFO will.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly regarding the NSFAS and to add further details, at the time of the annual report for 13-14, yes, we had concluded two contracts in January of this year with NSFAS to the tune of 148 million. And those results, even though they've been achieved, could not be reported and included and incorporated in the annual report. So there is an explanatory note in relation to that captured in the annual report. So I just wanted to note that, and it touches on what the chairperson was saying in terms of us having a developmental and partnership with NSFAS as a sister public entity. And so we've been working with them. So those results are there. They have not yet been reported. We cannot report results that we do not have supporting evidence that we can verify both through internal audit mechanisms because we would result in findings. So that's the issue. There's going to be a bit of a lag. I can confirm that there was 101 million that was granted outside of our target that was for specifically Walter Sisulu University for a number of learners that was projected at 1719. And the unit cost was quite high in terms of the budget. And so they have indicated to us recently that there is an available funding that has not been allocated, that they can, I'm hoping, almost double that number with the funding that's available. But I haven't got confirmation from them as yet. In relation to the other contract, it was for 47 million, it was to reach a target of 1350. So you'll see that the targeted number of unemployed, it's all for unemployed learners, for unemployed bursaries in our annual report was quite low. We redirected some of our employed bursaries to supplement that and then extended it slightly to come up with that 1350. And so that is through universities as well as TVET colleges. There's a small allocation there that they're managing. So we're working hard with them to ensure that those results and the carried over target will be reflected in our 14-15 year, that we're able to report and exceed our results for unemployed bursaries through NSFAS. And as Chair mentioned, we're also working with the AG to ensure that we don't duplicate the audit costs for 14-15 between the institutions, and we've got a meeting set up this month to resolve that. And the other issue I just wanted to mention, although it wasn't specifically referred to in your comment around the surplus, and us rushing to have allocation so that we can, you know, ensure that our stakeholders are benefiting within our sector as opposed to funds being swept to support national priorities. I think the allocation of the 511 million, which services, what was that number again? 23,000 learners. I think it's quite important for me to leave you with a key message that that was the outcome of a 16-month process thereabouts, where the new board, when it was appointed in July last year, identified the need to relook at the process from a governance perspective. And we have, and because of the contract management challenges from prior year projects that we were experiencing at an operational level, I think this was absolutely instrumental. The process that we instituted involved on-site due diligence of the applicants to assess financial and practical ability to perform against contracts that we were wanting to allocate. And that has fundamentally changed the way in which we are now convinced that the implementation and results and performance of those contracted parties will be forthcoming. So the decisions around those allocations are based on very solid and independently verified evidence and facts that were provided by the stakeholders. We also, the fundamental shift in our contract management, which I mentioned to about 31% of that 23, we've already got learner documentation before we even contract. So we're saying to stakeholders, we don't want to contract with you until you give us learner documentation that we can verify that you can actually achieve those results. So in the past, that was happening post-contracting, and there was also an almost an indefinite period against which stakeholders could enroll learners for learning interventions. So we've cut that down dramatically in redesigning our business processes to ensure that at the time we contract, the learners are already close to enrollment. We've got some post-contracting documentation that we would need. Induction happens and implementation starts almost immediately post-contracting. So for us, our processes are much more sound, and we believe that it's achievable, and hence our confidence that we're able to talk to today related to the prior year allocation. And so with those lessons learned, we've managed to expedite that process into a 2 to 3 month period. So that's why we're also confident that the 14-15 and 15-16 allocations can be managed through that process. I'm going to conclude on that basis. Thank you very much.
So committing to NEFA?
In terms of the 15-16 year, we've got a provisional allocation, and it's coincidentally the 66 million that the chair mentioned, but it's not the same cost of money. So that's what we were provisionally allocating for the 15-16 year, but that hasn't yet. We are second draft submissions for those annual performance plans are due on the 14th of November, and we have a board workshop to still finalise that allocation. So that's for the 15-16 year, and then the allocations that we're still currently working on, there might be some surplus within that, as the chair mentioned, that they would be able to use by agreement between the parties to extend the number of learners.
I know you're talking in terms of your MTF students. Now there's surplus here. So we want money for January up to March from the start. That's where the desperation is. And you've seen it at the beginning of this year, there were protests because of the new entry that cannot be assisted due to budgetary constraints and also the misalignment. Now, we're checking on whether you cannot assist the kids. If you are not able to redirect funds into that space. I am deliberately saying this because if you've got a surplus, my fear is that I know that government is desperate to find money. So I really want this one committed because they might take it, might not resolve over this supply. Or what does the law say? Are you able to keep your, because I know some entities, the regulations are, they cannot, like you don't roll over the money, you can keep it. So in your case, so that's the money that I want us to protect so that it doesn't go anywhere else. still in line with training, with education, higher education of with higher education and career, postgraduate training. So I want us to keep it there by redirecting it to NESA. I'm sure you can help. So it's part and parcel of this nation building, you know? There's a problem here and we're shouting for help. Okay?
Honorable Chair, I think in the interest of corporate governance, we cannot say here we are committing so much to the NSFAS in this forum.
From the settlers.
Yes, because the management materials take this to the board. I cannot go back to the board and say the three of us, me and the two colleagues, made this commitment, you know, the portfolio committee. But we can safely say this money is definitely going to be used for skills development. And we can also safely say that we can make the commitment that we are still going to add more money to the money we have put to the NS fund, because that particular decision is there. In terms of the amount, it would be out of proper corporate governance for us as board members who are here to give that specific thing.
I can only say thanks for your vision and leadership on this one. I'm sure they have responded to all the questions. I don't know if there are follow-up questions. I can see Mr. Ketan, you want to say something. Can read your mind, you know. Okay. No, that's fine. It's true. We have requested the department to redirect the 185 million that was transferred to a national state fund, because I know that they also need to give up all their money there. So we're not helping them. You actually want them to look like they have underspent. So we want this one to go away to be correctly used. Mr. Trudeau, any comment and commitment?
At this point in time, not the chairperson. We are looking at that. We are looking at the cash flow situation of NSFA, especially for the first 3 months of the new academic year. And the one aspect that we need to be cautious about is to create commitments that we will not be able to meet in future years. We now send too many students into the system with research, and the other questions don't catch up in future years, then we may have a bigger crisis. But we are looking at the situation together with NSFAS, together with institutions, and the comments from the committee is noted and appreciated, and we will be with it. Thanks.
Thank you very much. To me, it's still a commitment to go and look at it and take a decision within the parameters of the law to redirect. Thank you. Ms. Killian?
I was just thinking that we have to be in the house of two chairpersons.
What's the time now?
It's 2:30. So we still have to go back to our offices and submit our documents, etc.
All right. I know that I'm not budgeted for your office time, for self-sufficiency, but of course I'll have to be kind because you've worked so hard since this morning. Thank you very much. Now, in future, when you come here, I'm sure you have also made observations. This team is working very hard, so you really would have to come here well prepared. So this was just a start. So when you come back, it means this thing is going to be regurgitated to another level. So thank you very much for all your responses, Chair. I was really impressed, because normally the chairperson would depend on the CEO. And in my next round of these interactions, I promise you, because the board is the accounting authority. It's actually the one that must account to us. But then you find that the chairperson would, but I'm very impressed. I'm happy with your hands-on approach. That's how you get things done. But if you up the gate, I promise you come here, you'll be surprised yourself here in this meeting when you come from the state institution. But thank you very much. And let me also thank the honorable members for your, indeed it was a vigorous engagement, but also focus, and you really touched on real issues. I think this is the way to go. Let's keep up the good work. At this moment, do we have tea? No, we don't have. Okay, fine. But if there's anything that you can grab there from what is remaining, so there's no wasteful expenditure. You must start here with us, demonstrating them. But thank you so much. The meeting stands adjourned. Okay, for the honorable members, have you looked at your agenda? There's an adoption of minutes that we need to do. So we can allow the members here to think they're spending time listening. This is our quality time. Come again? Thank you for consideration and adoption of the minutes. Do you have a proposal?
I have a question about that. I was wondering, because it was a committee meeting that was held jointly with appropriations, I wanted to know, is that how we usually take minutes, on just on our side, or is it usually a joint set of minutes that they adopt and we adopt? I was just wondering, I was not 100% sure when I needed direction of that.
You've raised a very important issue. Let's go back and find out about the correct way of doing things so that we start right. If the other side, if they have adopted, then the last copy must still come in so that we also adopt it as the other copy. So it is the one that was adopted that side. Okay. No, that's fine. If we don't have time, it's a matter of adoption. Just go into what you are good at. Reading. And then in the next meeting we will get adopted. I hope we will. Okay. But thank you so much for your hard work. Thank you. Thank you.